Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of that galaxy and from the center of our own, this is Four Center Presents Other Center, Cues of the Other. I'm Ken Napsok.
I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
And I'm Jennifer Lando.
And we are here to answer your questions. We thank you so much for playing along with us here as we support the SAG-AFTRA and WGA strikes. We are taking questions from our audience, both online, online in the general public, and on our Patreon page, which is also online, as it turns out. And we are answering questions of the others. This takes us into a lot of wonderful different spots. We're going to dive into a second. But as always, we want to let you know that the podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Today, we're recommending a classic. We talked about it recently on our Life Ranked edition about our favorite books, and that is The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. You can get that on Audible, narrated by Stephen Fry. Of course, there is six books in the increasingly misnamed trilogy of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. But I recommend starting at the beginning. The first book, check it out on us by going to audibletrial.com/4center. That's audibletrial.com/4center. So that's a recommendation. But Joseph, we have an ask.
That is right. This week we have been talking about moving past the fear of shifting to other center for a while and embracing the joy, embracing that this is actually an opportunity to maybe get some new and different listeners who maybe like that other galaxy but aren't as deep into it and might enjoy our conversations about, hey, life, the universe, and everything, which is another book we recommend in the Hitchhiker's trilogy of six books. We're asking for two things. If you are able and willing and desirous to tell people that you enjoy Other Center, a great place to do that would be on the Apple Podcasts app, the shambling shell of iTunes, divided into different parts for Link to put together into a Triforce. Anyway, if you want to leave us a review specifically saying that you enjoy Other Center and why, I think that would be really helpful to us. And however, in this day and age, you talk to other human beings in person or text or on social media. If you want to suggest Other Center specifically to people who you think are not as deep into the other galaxy and might enjoy it, that would help us out a ton. So that's the ask. We're also going to plug very soon. We're going to be doing a special Life Ranked episode for patrons on Patreon. We'll be able to respond to the patrons' chats and have a nice lively discussion as well as a ranked. And then we'll make that available to the public after a little while. And our topic is going to be desserts. Information on when that live stream is happening is coming soon. There we go. Anything to add, Ken?
No, I'm excited for that one there. We just did our look at exercise. We're going to follow it up with desserts to balance out.
Accurate for me.
It's going to be fun.
We should have set that up so that it was really like literally one after the other. Exercise and the next day, desserts. but we'll see how long we're talking about other center things. There's going to be plenty of time. Maybe we'll do an episode that combines exercise and dessert. But for now, we are taking your questions. Right now, these are all questions that came to us from wonderful patrons on Patreon who answered the call a couple of weeks ago. And there are so many great questions coming in. I try to mostly grab them in sequential order, but sometimes there's one that comes a little bit later that's kind of relevant to where we're at or something going on in the world. And that is the nature of this first question, which comes to us from Victor Lopez de los Mozos Gomez. And Victor says, how are you? We're talking so much about how we're going to miss your discussions about Star Wars stuff. But how are you handling not being able to talk about it? I suppose that talking about Star Wars helped you in so many ways, too. This came in recently, but I bumped it up because it's extremely kind of Victor to ask. But also because, hey, we're not going to talk about it or reactions to it, but we are aware that, hey, the new show started and this would normally be a big buzz time for us where we're talking about the new show, but we're not. So it seemed like a good time to check in on how we're doing about not talking about it. So Ken, I'm going to start with you. How are you handling not talking about that other galaxy? Is it hard? Are there some surprise benefits? How are you coping?
Surprise benefits is where I'm at. I wish we were still talking about it. I wish it for a lot of career reasons. I think I handed out, but I got offered a chance to host an after show for that current new show at a big YouTube channel. It would have reunited me with my old Jedi Alliance co-host, and I turned it down and to kind of some surprise, some support, but surprise. And that wasn't easy to do because not only was it some immediate income, but it helps my own brand, if you will, but it definitely helps Force Center. It definitely puts us to a higher thing. And I had that, God, are we really doing this kind of gut reaction right away? I was in a grocery store in the desert when the email came across. I was like, are we just hurting ourselves for some principled stand? And at the end of the day, it ended up being an easier choice than I thought. Because I think not only is it important, I'm trying to find the positive. Again, wish we could be discussing it. I have some thoughts, good and even some negative thoughts on the current Space Saga show. I'd love to dive into it, but I am living in the present and not having to seek out the discourse or try to avoid it. I just lived the night that show dropped. I didn't even watch it when it hit right away. I waited hours, kids, and it felt good. So I cannot wait to get back. There was something you brought up last week, Joseph, off air, but there was a video going around, I think just an absolute incorrect take on a character in the Kenobi show. And I got more angry after you mentioned it to me because I said, then I saw the clip. I was like, I want to address this and we can't. So I just have to let it go. You have to let it go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you sent me a kind link to other people addressing it. And that was very healing. yeah. Jennifer, I want you to jump in. How is it affecting you to be not talking about the other galaxy?
I, too, waited hours, in fact, a whole day before I watched that show. And part of the reason why is because the fun is being able to be a part of the communal aspect of it. And I just felt, I don't know, or maybe it was just me being defiant and wanting to find the right time when I was awake. But I enjoy talking about Star Wars with you two in particular because you always bring... You open my eyes to things that I didn't see. You help me wrestle with things that maybe I have problems with. After I watched the episode, it was like, okay, now what? And unfortunately on Twitter, my discourse is really it's really negative. And so I just was like, I'm just kind of tuning out of that. I'm also not talking about it personally on my Instagram, my TikTok, and that is what I primarily talked about. And I kind of had an existential crisis where I was like, who am I without that? I mean, really, like we all of us have been talking about Star Wars for a long, long time online, being an active part of the Star Wars community. And I just was like, I don't know who I am when I'm not talking about that. Mm-hmm. Do I have things of value to say when I'm not talking about that? It really opened my eyes to, to that I had something I had not really thought about. So it's actually been a good challenge for me to separate myself from that galaxy. And hopefully when we are able to talk about it, it will be really exciting and a happy reunion.
But yeah,
might be a while.
Yeah, I think it's definitely going to be a while, and I'm really relating to a lot of things that you're saying, Jen. And I think Ken and I both had the same experience where we were putting together promo stuff for episodes and digging through the internet to find pictures of us together, or sometimes alone, where there is nothing on us that's advertising the galaxy. Mm-hmm. I did some deep Google searches. Like, I know Jennifer was in some commercials that I don't think she did a Super Bowl commercial with galactic stuff on. I'll find a picture from that, you know, but they're like, Ken and I aren't great about just taking life photos together. And even the ones the few we do have are like, we're covered t-shirts and hats.
Yeah. Or they're comically artistic, like your great drink photos it's hard to get a thumbnail out of that stuff.
Yeah, we need other center headshots is what I'm getting at. Mm-hmm. No, I echo a lot of the feelings of the good and the bad. I had a different experience with the new show. Not going to talk anything about the content or the reaction. But I think I've been on a fun journey with this is an opportunity to really, really double, triple check what I love versus what I get into to talk about. Or do they overlap, or what's the truth? And I got really excited and did all of my rituals that I would do. I watched the new show the second it was available. I took my photos that I would normally post on social media and I sent them to both of you.
Yeah. Great email.
And then I had, this may, you know, I don't know, this might bother some fans who really want us to still be talking about the other galaxy. I found that writing down all my thoughts was a big part of the process for me. And I was like, at first I was like, well, this is great. I can just go on with my night. And I was like, I can't. Nah. I wrote all my notes that I would normally write, not in the level of detail, and didn't look up canon stuff to double check and all that. I didn't do that. But like in terms of like what's working for me, what are my critiques? Mm-hmm. What do I think this is about? Like I wrote all those notes. And that was kind of nice to see. Oh, I truly, truly want to do that. I'm not Force Center we're lucky for it to be a part of the way that we make our livings, and it is a job, but it was nice to check in on what parts of my love are my love and my process, and what parts are I'm doing this for the podcast.
Mm. Yeah, that's a great way to look at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think to the heart of Victor's question about Handley not being able to talk about it, or Victor says, I suppose that talking about Star Wars helped you in so many ways too. That's been the biggest shock for me, I think, because by talking about the how and the why, and when people have criticisms, you know, I don't think we try not to ever go, nuh-uh.
Yeah.
We try to say, We disagree with this take. Here's our argument. Here's our evidence to support it. Here's the emotional journey we went on. Here's what the actual text says. Is the text being misread? We go through a process, even though it's emotional because it's art, an analytical process to attempt to, even though it's an opinion, in an essay-like way, still back up what we said. Mm-hmm. So being a little bit separated from the analytical process has been hard for me. And yeah. I think final thing I'll say here, and then I want to kick it back to you two, of particularly, you know, with a lot of the philosophy that I think, you know, that saga is a morality tale and it has a lot of lessons. Sometimes they're literally on the screen at the beginning of the episode. And by constantly talking about them, I'm reminded to do them. And I've had some moments where I've struggled with things like being impatient. I've had moments where I've struggled to stay in the moment because I'm having unfounded anxiety about what's going to happen next, and it's impacting me in the moment. I've found myself being a little bit more selfish and having a harder time reminding myself to think about the other person's perspective. And those things are on my mind when we're talking about it always, because we're talking about it and I want to live what we talk.
Yeah,
so yeah. I have been missing living in the tenets of the thing as much. It has affected me, I have to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can get that. There's, without, you know, because we do the deep dive in and we have the notes, and you really, what we're doing is breaking apart what it's about, what it's communicating. So I didn't do what you did. I didn't do the notes. I might pay for that later when we finally do record the show. But I had some friends still text me, not only just thoughts, but also, hey, this, what is this? Or also, I didn't like this. And I found myself like a boxer on his heels. I didn't know how to engage with it. I was like, oh, I didn't really study it. I haven't watched it twice yet. Usually I've watched it 3 or 4 times by the time you text me. Now I'm like, yeah, sure, right, man. I think you're right. I guess you're right. I don't know. Like, so I felt the loss of that. And that understanding is something I take into the world. You know, I understand what you're saying.
Interesting. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And yeah, I find the most difficult thing for me is not just Star Wars, but all movies and TV shows ever. So I am a pop culture person, and how I express myself is through memes, references from movies, whether it's lines or costumes or a scene, right? And so it's like literally cutting off a part of me. And it's also a way for me to like connect with other people, because yeah, it's just like a shorthand that you can have when you reference these old things or new things, whatever it is, right? And so online, I just feel kind of like stifled. I was going to share something. I'm like, I can't. That's from a TV show. This was like a funny meme that I was going to share to express how I was feeling. And that's really been challenging. And there was a period where I was like, I don't know what, I guess I just won't say anything. But that didn't feel right either. So again, I'm having to navigate. I mean, but that is, I'm proud of that's how I am. And, you know what I mean? Like that's, so I just have having to get a little bit more creative with how I express myself.
No, I really agree with that. Of I think we're all dying to talk about the doll movie. I've been doing shower podcasts about the doll movie. You know, I think a positive thing with not trying to keep up with everything has been making more time for other pop culture. So my head is full of that, and some of it it's delightful to talk about. It's great to spend more time on books and movies, but then sometimes I slip and I'm almost like, well, I watched this, 100-year-old movie. Everyone involved with it is long gone, but it is past work of a struck company, so I can't talk about it. Is that keeping track of all that, Jennifer? You're right. Is really difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Any final thoughts from you, Ken?
Well, one of the benefits of this, Victor, is we were able to do a bit of a gear shift, and a lot of folks are sending us nice, kind words of other center, and like Joseph said up top, I think we've transitioned or making sure we try to transition from, oh my gosh, the fearful, is this going to work? And there's still some struggles attached to that, but now we're in the, hey, this is part of who we are going forward. And I don't, other centers, not necessarily going away. We're going to find out how to incorporate that and how to keep doing it. Mm-hmm. Well, this has been a lot of fun. It's been some good quality podcasting fun for me. Mm-hmm. And talking about the stuff with you. We joke about the revelations of Jen being a punk Nazi fighter. It's been wonderful. but that is a big lesson of change and going forward and finding a new part of yourself and finding a new thing you can take forward. And that's been a fun aspect of that. So to your question, Victor, like how are we doing? Good, actually, for the most part, really good. It's been a fun journey.
Yeah, no, the talking about other stuff has been really, really rewarding and fun, and not just the Jennifer surprises. That's a big part of it.
Big part.
It's a big part of it. Now, my wife has learned now. She's like, did you find anything surprising out from Jennifer? Oh, no. I'll be like,
she listed Sinatra in her top five bands and musicians.
It's great. It's great. So many rewards, and I think by far the biggest reward is hearing from everybody enjoying it, but then also hearing from listeners who would normally, you know, let us know their favorite five bounty hunters, letting us know their favorite five books is great.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Victor, for asking us how we are. We hope you are well. We're going to move on to our next question from Douglas Dubois. Douglas says, what makes the perfect opening song on a mixtape? Or further to that, what key mood fluctuations or changes are essential for that banger mixtape? All right. Oh, this looks like a straightforward question, but there are many sub questions within this. And I'm going to start with that of Ken, did you actively make actual mixtapes? Not a generic term, actual cassettes with two different sides. Did you make mixtapes for people back in the day?
That's how I express my love to you. Absolutely. And there's that great Semisonic song, Singing in My Sleep. It's all about making mixtapes and CDs as well. But yeah, absolutely. And down there's an art to it. It's a personal art. It's not necessarily exact science. And especially the only exact science part is when you have, we're trying to squeeze that one last song on before the tape runs out on side B. Feeling when the click, you hear the click of the recorder and you're like, it didn't work. And now you have to send someone, all right, the Tracy Bonham song cuts off in the end. Sorry.
What are you going to do? How about you, Jennifer? Did you actively make mixtapes?
Oh, I did. Oh, yeah. I made so many, and I have found so many of them going and cleaning my mom's house. Yeah. But I have no way to listen to them. No way. I have no cassette player. But yeah, it was a real art form. You're right, Ken. It was how you expressed your love or like your friendship or your connection with someone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It wasn't just recommending music. I mean, mm-hmm. I think I probably received more mixtapes than I made because I think I was shy about my music taste and, you know, I didn't want to make people, you know, hey, I like this girl. I'll make her a mixtape that's mostly Guns N' Roses songs. And maybe The End by The Doors. I don't know if that's what I want to communicate. But I remember particularly, you know, late 80s, 90s, getting into some mixtapes and just like, is a Zapruder film emotional examination of, does this song transition mean she feels this way?
Oh, God. Yeah. Oh, I got like a serious mixtape from my friend at the radio station, and there was some romantic entanglements, but I took the mixtape as a roadmap of her emotions to my heart, and that was not the road she was on. No, I just thought you'd like psychedelic first. Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, I just thought the song Joey by Concrete Blonde was a good song. It's not anything about how I feel about you. Like, okay, I just, you know, it's my name, so I didn't.
Yes, I've had that instance where somebody gave me a mixtape. I was like, oh, wow, I guess we feel the same way about each other. Nope. Nope. It was just like, I just thought you might like these songs. I'm like, oh, okay.
If anybody did have a successful relationship blossom out of mixtapes, please let us know, because I wonder if that's something we've all been hunting and it's just a total white whale of relationships back in the day.
Amazing.
All right. So going forward to Douglas's actual question, I feel we can interpret this as a literal mixtape if we want, with two sides, which changes everything. Or we could, you know, think of it more modern is like, you know, a Spotify list or whatever. So feel free to embrace however you want. Jennifer, I want to start with you. What do you think is the right opening song of a mixtape? And how do you think about the general shape of a mixtape?
It's got to sound epic. It has to be driving, motivational. Yep. These are the key words that I look for when I'm selecting my free music. My royalty-free music, right? Driving, motivational. And it should really grab your attention. So immediately I think of like The Who, Baba O'Reilly, right? That, that, or even going literally from a movie, Blue Suede, Hooked on a Feeling. Ooh, da, 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 ooh, da, that, right? And then going into the next beat. I love that. I love it. May not even be a song that I, on its own, it's not my favorite, but it just has to set the tone for the rest of the songs coming afterwards. But it has to be upbeat, in my opinion.
Okay. I love this. And then what is the shape of it like? Do you have opinions about like the arc of a mixtape, or do you just feel like you draw people in and then you stay in that groove and it's a mood, or do you want there to be tonal shifts?
There should be a tonal shift somewhere towards the middle or the beginning of the middle, so that it like maybe it gets a slower song, maybe reflective, or like you could throw in a Led Zeppelin, you know, Stairway to Heaven, like that kind of thing. A little bit of a longer song, right? And then you end on a high note, another up-tempo. I'm all about the up-tempos.
Yeah, yeah. Quick side note on Led Zeppelin, because we were talking about Zeppelin. I had a great experience re-listening to some Zeppelin, because sometimes songs that I've listened to a long time, they feel a little stuck in the past. But because we'd all talked about them, it felt fresh and new. So that was nice. It was kind of like a mixtape. Mm. Yeah. Ken, where do you go with the banger beginning, the banger structure? How do you make a mixtape bang?
Jen is right. To Jen, you must listen. Yeah, no, absolutely. That's the key. And I think the opening song, driving, you mentioned driving, having something. I want a song that literally picks you up and carries you. Mm. And, Bob O'Reilly's a great example. There's a song of Monsters and Men called Alligator. And it's a track one of the album they released in 2019. And it's a great tune, and it's simple, and it's driving, and it's a rock tune. It's also changed. They're kind of mostly an Icelandic folk pop rock band, and that song comes out and announces, hey, we're a little different right now. But it's that type of song. It starts a little, it fades in, it carries you, and I do agree, you want to kind of get back to the feeling. I like telling the stories, like stringing songs together and seeing how they work, and you know, obviously for me, if I'm making, in my 20s, I'm making you a mixtape. It's because I'm madly in love with you and trying to convince you. So, you know, I'm definitely going to tell you everything. But even now, when I put together playlists and what I do on pop rock and radio, I do that live on the fly. I'll maybe pick out 3-4 songs that I know I'm going to have to start the show. And you look for this. You look for the big opener. And then you do a talk set. And then the next 3 songs tell a bit of a story. And I try to connect, because I don't know music. You know, in terms of, you know, I can't read music. I can't play music. I can't do that, but I'm looking for the similar sounds. What does this make you think? Does Living Moore's song Sharp definitely makes you think of a Blondie song? So maybe that will work. And that's why I tell the stories. But then also like, hey, we got three Sad Bastard songs. We got Paul Westerberg, Paul Weller, and, you know, Ryan Adams together. We got to change the tone up. And I use a 2-3-4 song set, meaning 3 songs is a good set. And then you can start switching the tone or the pacing. And then, you know, if you're doing radio, that's the liners or the, you know, the things that, you know, you're listening. That allows you to change it up. So that if the song coming out of that liner sounds a little different or changes the mood, it doesn't feel weird. And it works. And it's not a science. It's all emotions. But I like to think I've been successful at doing it. And then, end, with something big. And it doesn't, if you've gone sad, get a little happy. Get a little.
Wow.
These are all great notes that I agree with. For a second, when you said Three Sad Bastards, I thought that was an actual band that I heard about. Maybe that was the original name for the Traveling Wilburys, and then they added some more members.
I get accused, and it's accurate, of liking old sad white guy music, meaning it's a broken middle-aged man with an acoustic guitar. Who might have had a rockier, you know, punk rock past, like Westerberg or Paul Weller, the Godfather. So yeah,
wow,
yeah, I agree with definitely the opening track has got to be powerful. I thought of it with like a whatever your theme is, start with the T-Rex of that mood, like the biggest, loudest, most powerful, the dominant song, and just grab them by the emotional shirt collar, which is fun to imagine a T-Rex grabbing someone by the shirt collar. And then, yeah, I think a lot of things that I would, a lot of mixtape, it's a journey. So I think a lot of things that I think about putting together the run order for a variety show or even a script makes sense. And you're both talking about them, like start big, then have a little bit of a surprise. If you're going to go low, you do that in the middle to the, maybe the end of the second act, so the back half of the middle, and then you build back up. And I think you can end real big, right? Or you could have like the maybe like there's a huge emotional punch, you know, if you're gonna put Behind Blue Eyes, that's second to last.
Yes.
Yeah. And then you end with the dessert track that's like more upbeat, you know?
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. There's a phrase I like that I think applies to a lot of artistic things. I think it definitely applies to jokes, but I think it applies to mixtapes too. Of sometimes the most successful thing is a surprise that makes perfect sense.
Yes.
You're right. Looking for something that maybe nobody else would think to put that song next, but when you do, it works like perfection. So you get a reason. Like anybody can just, you know, an AI can do a best of David Bowie, and they are, and it's horrible, and I don't like it. There's my grumpy moment, my one sad bastard moment for the day. the point of a mixtape is some level of artistry of like, you would never think to put these artists together, but actually that one ends on the same chord that this one begins on, and they're actually both about regret, but you never think of it. And that's the personal and what makes it fun and beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it is. It's not just dumping your favorites onto one tape. It's stringing a story out. And I want to share, Douglas Dubois is one of my Pop Rock and Radio listeners and always has some great requests and always fills the vibe. And, you know, sometimes a request will come in that is not what I'm going for, or it's not what the current vibe is. So, you know, all right, I'm going to honor that request. Someone will request a Journey song. I'm not a huge fan of Journey, but they got some big hits. It doesn't fit well with what I'm doing. So I'll have to, how do we work to that? And it's a fun challenge. How do we get from an independent band like Child Seat to one of the biggest bands in the world, Journey, at one point? A fun journey.
Wow. Reminds me, I took a DJ class where like actually mixing record DJs.
Right.
And that's exactly right. Like how can you get to this next song, whether it's through tempo, can you slow down the tempo, you know, the beats and stuff like that, or maybe it's like the key or like you're saying, even the emotion or just like the theme of the song can really be a great way to lead into it. Boy, that was a lot of fun. Yeah. I missed DJing.
Yeah.
See, another surprise. Oh. DJ Landa Jazzy over here.
DJ Astro Girl.
Are you serious?
Yeah, that was my name for the class. It was a class. It was just a class.
When did you take this? What year are we talking?
Oh, my husband and I had been dating, and I think it was just something fun that we wanted to do. I think, oh my gosh, like at least 10 years ago, at least.
Did you do it together? You did a couple's DJ class?
Yeah, we did it together. And then there was even a performance. And I forget, some big DJ came. It was really nerve-wracking. My hands were all like sweaty when you're trying to, you know, mix the record. It was really fun, though.
Wow. Look, I thought DJ Atomic Blonde was great at Star Celebration, so not trying to take anyone's gig. DJ Elliot as well. Jen, I'm booking you in Tokyo.
Only I'd get up with it.
Astro Girl.
Yeah.
Okay. Nice. Kenda, have you ever had a DJ name? I know you've been more of a, you know, traditional broadcasting disc jockey, not hey everybody, come to the dance floor at the wedding DJ.
No, I have not. I did have an on-air name. Mark Ellis and Josh McCougar will always tease me. I started out in micro-powered radio, which is a nice way of saying pirate radio. It was actually my first time on air.
Oh, wow.
And shout out to Hole in the Sky in Grover Beach, California, Charlie Goodman there. And my name was Flying Freddy Fables.
I love it.
And it was like, hey, you know, actually it was like, hi, it's Flying Freddy Flay Fables, welcome. And then I got hired at the actual K-Bear, the actual license station. And everyone there had a name, right? Like Freddie B, and the program director was John Mackey, which was not, John was a real name, but that was not his real name. And so they were like, what's your name? And I was like, I don't know. I used to be called Flying Freddy Fables. And they're like, no. Cool. So I for like a 6-month period, I was Ken Fables, which was the weirdest thing. And so I slowly transitioned to just my name. And I had a little bit of a weird ego about it. Here I'm this dumb 18-year-old kid. I was like, my name will be remembered. I want people to remember my name.
And yeah, you have a great radio name. Your real name is great radio name.
It works syllable-wise, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But the desire to throw in some sort of nickname, I'm sure was powerful. Powerful. I love the voice that you used for your pirate radio days. So if I have to have a DJ name, I'll be inspired and be DJ Crack Voice.
I didn't have
that. Hey, everybody.
That was it.
DJ was Shaggy. Yeah.
Thank you, Douglas, for the amazing question that took us in surprising directions. And I think we got to go full Morning Zoo crew. Can we need a sound effect for every time there's a Landa surprise?
I don't know if this will translate here. Let's see. Oh, yeah. We got.
Oh my gosh. I feel like I'm on a morning show now. I like this. I've always wanted to be on a morning show.
We got Jenny Landis coming in here with the sports. Yay!
Yeah.
What's surprise. Up? So today.
Oh no.
We should incorporate these just in general because I love it.
Yep. Yeah, we can pick when we get back to the galaxy, we can pick specific characters those goes with.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
All right, with that, we're going to take a quick break and see if there are any more Landa surprises on the other side when we got one more question back.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome back. Hey, everybody. We got sports and weather on the fives. We got a lot of things. We got the Scrimshaw coming in here right now. We're answering questions here on the Other Center edition of Q's of the Other. It's been a lot of fun. Joseph, we got one big one left.
Yes. Now it's time for an important and insightful expose about neighborhood lawn maintenance. Anyway, we have a question from Jamie Burrows. Jamie says, when processing various emotions, which outlet do you tend to gravitate towards? Consuming existing arts, such as music, sports, TV, movies, etc., or personally diving into the creation of arts or engaging in physical activities? This is a great and powerful question, and it touches on a lot of the different things that we've been talking about. But I think it's great that the core of Jamie's question is not necessarily about, you know, enjoying these things, but using them specifically to process our emotions. So, Ken, where do you go? Do you have a both or neither reaction? Where do you go?
Somewhere in the middle, like in terms of like, what do I watch if I'm feeling a certain way or working through some things? Music is the biggest one. Clearly, it's why we love talking about it here. So I'll go to that. I don't watch as much shows and movies as I used to. And that's if people follow me long enough, they might know that. But I, at one point, I was a complete movie nut. And I had a top 10 list that was not my top 10, like, favorite. These are the classic films. Like, these are the top 10 movies that I process emotions with. I actually had to turn them into my therapist at one point. He's like, I need this. And we got some great analysis out of it. So it's like, you know, I struggled with, I'm going to be alone and I have no purpose. That was a lot of my 20s who didn't experience that. But, you know, I was real down and out about it. So it's like the movie about a boy I'd watch. And it's like, I'd watch it 50 times, but it wasn't about the movie anymore. It was about that character's feeling that. How do I deal with that? Do I want to stay in that spot? So I've definitely felt the power of that. But I don't sit down, and I'd be curious, I really want both your insights into this for your own journeys. But like, I don't find myself going, today I'm feeling X, I need to write based on that. I've never experienced that. I sit down a little bit later. I think some of the stuff I've done the last couple of years with my Saturday Night Knapsack parody satire kind of show, what came out of, there was important things going on in the world. This is post the murder of George Floyd. How do I talk about it as a podcaster who's made a lot of his brand either talking about lightsabers or 7-Eleven food? Like, how do I address that? And comedy was the way to do that. And so I started to do that, moved. And now the show I have, The Blathering, is just me going, hey, there was a shooting this weekend. I'm going to talk about it. I'm going to get angry about it, or I'm going to address it. So that's changed. And that's been something that I didn't always have, to Jamie's question. If I was feeling down or scared of the world or mad at the world, I just didn't put it any place.
Mm. Yeah, that's important to have a place to put it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We can dive in a little bit deeper on these points, but I want to get a kind of a big picture as well. So, Jennifer, mm-hmm. Where do you go? Do you go more to existing art or creating something of your own?
I was going to say sports. I really like football. sorry. No.
Land of surprise.
That'd be surprise. No, but I mean, some people do. That's where they get mm-hmm. their inspiration from. I have a lot of family who's really into sports. For me, it is definitely, it's like the chicken or the egg. Usually it's, and ever since I was a kid, I would escape. I would get inspired by watching movies, watching TV shows, watching theater. And then I'd get so excited or be like, I want to do that too. Or that inspired me to talk about blah, blah, blah. And then I would want to go and make the art, whether it was making clothes or making little short films, which I tried to do when I was a kid, and now it's making videos. So, and I find that when I get stuck, that is the best thing that I can do is to go and just be inspired by other people's art. I mean, there's nothing like going to the movie theater. I think when I was, I'll mention the name. Who was it? La Femme Nikita, but it was the one with Bridget Fonda. Remember that movie?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, Point of No Return or something like that. And I remember afterwards, I was going through a really tough time where I was being bullied, and my friend was too. We decided we were going to take martial arts class because we were we're going to go to the gym and we're going to sign up for this martial arts class so we can defend ourselves if anybody like tries to mess with us. And it felt really empowering. And I was so inspired by watching her beat people up on the screen. So, I would absolutely say art and watching art has been a constant in my life.
Yeah. I think what's inspired me the most is Jack Bauer yelling at people. No, that's a great story of just a direct inspiration. I think it's fascinating for anybody who I think anybody can be creative, but anybody who truly chooses to invest time in it, that existing art can be inspirational from, if it has a narrative at all, from I want to be like that. You know, that person can defend themselves. I want to be like that. To you can watch existing art for the creative process and be inspired by the creators who made that. So I think it offers those kind of different levels of inspiration. Mm-hmm. And I remember a shift when I realized like, oh, I used to be all like, I want to learn to be like the character. Now I'm like, I want to learn to be like the creators, which is totally different. I think for Jamie's question, I think it's absolutely both for me for processing emotions, existing art and making my own art. In terms of existing art, it's really powerful about it. And we've been talking about it with books and in music in particular and talking around the movies and shows we can't really talk about. I think existing art offers two important things. I think it offers catharsis or change. Like for me, it can be extremely powerful to listen to incredibly depressing music when I'm sad and just accept it and just say like, the business of today is not trying to change it or fix it. The business of today is to wallow. And that was one of the things that super turned me on to Frank Sinatra. I was telling that longer story on our music episode, but just, you know, feeling true heartbreak and then listening to this guy travel through time and feel that absolute despair. And sometimes you don't want to stay there, but sometimes it's so healing to just go, today I'm going to be devastated. And I think that's why breakup albums are so popular, right? To just feel like this feels like it is destroying your entire world. And to know that other people feel that way through art, that by itself is healing and cathartic. I think I definitely process emotions like sadness or anger, or just frustration at you know, the system, by just allowing music to reflect that and sing along.
I think it's a wonderful point and a deeper conversation to be had, but I think that's something I've talked about with just people in my life too. It's someone who's battled depression and just, you know, living. The thing you talk about, Joseph, of just like today is not a good day. And that's part of this. And I'm going to listen to this great art inspired by heartbreak or movies. And I'm going to cry. We're going to be upset. I'm not going to know my way forward. I'm not going to know. And yeah, you're right. The tough thing is not to stay there. And there's, again, we always say we give sometimes the simple solutions, but we understand the complicated nature of living. That's one of the, been the one of the biggest things for me of like, nope, today I'm down. And that makes it not better or everything. Just kind of it gives yourself that permission to, that's part of the process. It's part of the process. I think.
Yeah. I had, I haven't talked about her as an artist, so I don't know if you guys have strong feelings, but I was going through a rough patch where I just like, I didn't want to listen to upbeat music because it felt like somebody telling you to smile for a photo when you don't want to is like even music I loved. And I bought Lana Del Rey's first album and just like, that's the mood I'm in right now. And I just want to let myself be in that mood of, vaguely depressed and bummed out. And I had a really good bad day in that I just the dam broke and I felt bad about everything I could possibly feel bad about, from, you know, career stuff to family stuff. It was just one of those days where everything came to a head and I felt the worst I felt in a long time, like really awful. And I let myself feel awful all day and listened to awful music and thought awful things. And then this was a night that Sarah had dance rehearsal and it was going to be home late. So at about 9 o'clock, I was like, I've wallowed and I've had the cathartic. Now I'm going to let art do the other thing it can do, which is actually change my mood. Mm. And I'm not going to name the movie. It's an old favorite comedy movie. Just one of my favorite, feels like getting back in touch with myself, and it's got a little bit of a dark edge, but it's a comedy and it ends on a happy beat. And it was great to have in basically kind of one period to let me wallow in it through art, and then let art kind of lift me out of it just a little bit. Was really, really powerful.
No, it's and look, it's like I said, it's sometimes easier said than done, or the danger all stays, and I get all that, but no, I think it's valuable.
Do either of you do that, embrace art as a way to change your mood? Like once you've been in a dark, upsetting place, does that ever work for you to put on a guaranteed happy song or movie? Or does that not work for you, Jennifer?
You know, I was making fun of sports because that's a bullied artist in me. But in actuality, sports has become a bigger part of my life, which I'm just now realizing this. Basketball. Mm-hmm. I love watching basketball with my husband and when we go out and watch basketball. And sometimes I'll be in the worst mood. And I'll be like, the Lakers are playing. I'm like, all right. And then I sit down. And I just get so inspired by how hard these athletes have worked and trained and by their ability, which is just for me. I'm like, I can't even imagine doing that. It really, because sometimes with art, if I consume a show or even sometimes music, I can start to beat myself up with it. Mm-hmm. I'm not successful like that. I'm not as accomplished like that. It almost like is adding salt into the wound. So by having sports, it's so far removed from me and my world. It forces me to kind of like get out of my own way and just like be in this moment and just be like, wow, okay, there is something bigger than what than my life. And it also sometimes going out and seeing a basketball game in person amongst the people, which I'm not a can't tell. I'm not really amongst the people too often.
Like Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, I'm like, wow, this is how the people live. They grab a beer and they have a hot dog, and this is kind of amazing. I mean, really, like I feel like an alien going to a different planet.
Makes sense.
People at the other corner of the stadium, is that DJ Astro Girl?
Why isn't she courtside with Jack Nicholson?
It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. And my daughter is really athletic. And I think sports is going to become a big part of our life. And just last night, she was, because she's also really, really tall. And, you know, kids have made comments. And I was like, look at Abby Wambach. She is 5'11". Look what she could do with soccer. My daughter's face just lit up. And I was like, oh, this is a way that I can inspire her. She doesn't always care about movies and things like that. But through sports, that can be her inspiration. So that was a real lesson. So I take back what I said earlier. Sports is an inspiration for me as well.
That's great. Ken, does it ever work for you to use art to change or shift your mood?
It's weird, man. I got to think about it. I don't have a smaller list of happy art, but also because, you know, the bad stuff is easier to believe. But also if I was to list, there's like three or four movies I could list to be like, oh, this lifts me up. And you might be like, how the bleep does that come up? And it usually just ends with a depressed George Clooney staring at a, you know, wall of flights. Like it's weird. So it's like, I almost don't want to list that because it's like my medicine might hurt you.
But your medicine's your medicine.
But my medicine, because I find it, but it goes back to what you're talking about. It's like, ah, this person, this story is expressing something simple or similar. And same with the music and I can move on with it. You know, George Harrison's All Things Must Pass is both the most uplifting song and one of the saddest songs I've ever. It's the same feeling. So there's that. But I do find that if I'm feeling good or feel, I'll turn to, that's when I turn to creating. And that's dangerous because you're not always going to be in a good mood when you're creating. So there's that. The sports thing is interesting because I watch less and less sports these days just for weird schedule of life and it's a weird thing, but like, and there's such a valuable conversation to have around sports in the sense of the damage it can cause, the way people put weird porn. Since Joseph and I, we've had valuable conversations about the emphasis on winning versus growth and power. There's and how it's how non-sports people are treated, right? As we all experienced growing up at one point. And I had turned myself into a sports guy because I got tired of feeling out of my friends trading baseball card conversations. Like I was like, I want in and I'm going to learn that. My dad wasn't a sports guy. My mom wasn't a sports person. But there's some great human stories that can be found in it. And I think, Jen, you're highlighting the good part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been some of the biggest moments. Some of the best cries of joy have been sports, watching other people achieve things while I'm in my living room.
It's narrative, but it allows you and encourages you to root for specific people and teams, and it creates a narrative, and you are involved, and that is the power of it, right?
Right.
Yeah, that's great. I want to talk just a little bit more. We're heading toward wrapping up here about creating as a means to process emotions. I think for myself, existing art. I absolutely helps, but nothing helps like creating. And I have had the direct. I remember time I was really angry and upset in high school, and I just drew the angriest drawing I could think of. And I still think of that and how good it felt. And I think sometimes it's not as immediate as I'm depressed. I listen to a depressed song, I cry. But I think sometimes you process feelings by the long process of creating something. If you're writing something longer, sometimes it even takes a while for you to realize like, oh, this is what's haunting me. And I didn't even think about it, but now it's coming out. So there's a real long game to getting a little bit of processing by creating. Cause there's been issues and ideas. And sometimes we're like, okay, well now I can put that away for a year or two. Cause I just said everything I have to say about it. But the big thing, and I kind of want to say this, barring a little bit of Ken's coaching hat, as a suggestion to people, I think it's less about what you say with art, but the processing emotion part, the curative part of art is creating anything at all.
Yep.
Just the act of creation. Once you get past the procrastination, which is fear-based, and all the fear and the judgment and the need for it to be perfect the first time and all that, once you get past that and you're almost in this more childlike state of it's just fun to create, the smallest act of creation makes you feel more alive. And I think that's more vital than it has ever been because I think there's a ton of different things going on in our society, but I think a lot of it is about the amount of time we spend on the internet. And I don't think the internet is just bad. It can connect people and all that, but I'm just talking about when so many things feel mechanized and you can't have a flowing organic conversation and everything is a drop down menu. And if you don't fit one of those three options, you can't do anything. Or if you're trying to accomplish something in life, the career, exercise, there's so much of life where you do everything you can. You push the button you're supposed to push 8 times and not a damn thing happens. That sits in our soul. And you take a piece of paper and you make one mark on it. You did that, and now there is evidence of the choice that you made. And just that, you decide to take an action, and there's an immediate evidence of it, makes you more alive again. You're a sentient, organic being who exists, and with one mark on a piece of paper, there's evidence that you're real, you're unique, you're alive. That, to me, is the most curative thing about art. Just make a mark to remind yourself that you're here and you matter.
Coach Knapsack says that's a win.
Yes, that's what I needed to hear. Boy,
oh, good, good.
To listen to that this section over every day when I wake up.
I'm gonna need to listen to it later today when I try to get some artwork done. Ken, do you have any final thoughts on this this topic of processing emotions through art?
Can't top that in terms of doing it. That's valuable stuff there. However you do it, because it's important to process these things. It's how we understand ourselves and the world.
Yeah. Jennifer, any closing thoughts from yourself?
No, you said it so perfectly. I just agree. Just doing it for yourself, not for the gram, not for this or to create content, but just to do it and get it out there. It just feels so good.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't always do it for the gram, kids. that is it. Those are our cues of the other for this week. We look forward to having more. We have so many great ones that I can't wait to get to. Thank you all for sending in the questions. If you are a patron and want to send in questions, just scroll down a little bit. I was desperate to find a photo, and there's just one I took of Ken in London eating fish. So look for that. He looks real happy as he's looking at his plate of fish and chips.
That's right.
And add your question under the picture of Ken eating fish. That is it. Ken, take it away.
There you go. Eat some more fish, kids. We're on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Threads at Force Center Pod as well. We'll let you know where we jump on any of the newer platforms out there as well. Facebook page, the oldest of the old, not counting MySpace and Friendster, is where we can be found at Force Center Podcast. We're on Instagram, YouTube as well. Podcasts available in a lot of different spots. Just search. You'll find us. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. And you can support us directly at patreon.com/Force Center. From there, you can get into our Discord, where I have no doubt people will be making DJ Astro Girl art in the weeks that follow. Follow me at Ken Knapsack or my website, kennapsack.com. Jen, where can they follow you? DJ jokes aside.
You can follow me on all the social media platforms at Jennifer Landa or TikTok at Jennifer Landa 1138.
Perfect. Joseph, take us home with where they can find and follow you.
Yeah, you can find me on all the social media. Find me on Blue Sky if you can, because I'm lonely over there. I need more friends over on Blue Sky. Let's be honest. At Joseph Scrimshaw is my handle everywhere. Thank you all for the wonderful cues. I hope you have enjoyed some of our A's.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction.
Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.